Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. It is a crowd favorite, ladies and gentlemen. Today, we'll hear from the author of the new book, Governing the Machine. Miriam Vogel is the president and CEO of Equal AI. She started it all here in Washington, D.C. and at the House at 1229. I'm so glad you wrote this book. I've watched you help CEO students, C-suiteers, then everyone in between, to understand what AI is, what needs to be done to ensure trust. I laughed one night we were here and they were all C-suiteers, you know, people sitting up, everyone was wearing an Hermes tie or something close to that. Not that I'm looking, but anyway, and they were looking at you like, oh, please explain this to me, hand-wringing, trying to figure AI out. And now you've put it in a book. So now you've given up the individual by individual. What do you think that will really turn people to understand how important this is and how they need to understand so that we'll all be safe? Let's start there. That's not too much. Let's hear it.
So I was inspired to write this book because mostly what I hear is people who are afraid. And they're a little ashamed to admit why they're afraid. And so in our book, we just outline 9 categories that I think cover it because we want to normalize it. The reason people are afraid is because they're thinking, they're asking the right questions. They have every reason to be afraid for the various reasons that they might offer you. They might tell you they have privacy concerns. They might tell you they're worried about hallucinations, workforce displacement, the environment. Those are all real and need to be addressed so that we can get to the next part of the conversation, which is how they, their family, their community will benefit from AI. But we can't get to that part. We can't inspire people to want to use it until they trust it. They can't trust AI until we have a governance system in place. So this book is a playbook. I get to work with some of the leading companies on how you do this well. Luckily, there's a lot of alignment. So we tried to just open the curtain and let everyone see what it looks like in the companies that are really thoughtful in doing this work effectively.
I started by talking about CEOs, and then I do want to get into families and education, all of that, because this whole industry is really being run mostly, I think everyone would agree, with the hyperscalers, right? What happens will depend on access to compute, dollars, et cetera. So you're trying to get their attention as well as government. What are you hearing from the companies?
The companies are our partners in this effort. They have strong governance systems in place at many of the companies. So when we have a badge program for senior executives, we'll have Google DeepMind come tell us about the years of work that they've put into AI governance. But this needs to be a conversation for all the companies. Right now, most companies are using AI. Studies show between 80, 90% of companies are using AI in some way. Companies who don't think they're using it should look at their HR departments, look at their marketing departments. They're using it. But what they don't have is a framework in place to know what's safe, what's authorized. Most of the times, they don't even know all the ways that they're using AI. So a key part of this conversation is bringing all of the deployers and users into the conversation, making sure that all of the ways that the companies who are using AI are safe and aligned.
I was going to ask you about some of the people we've met in this room that are working on these issues, that work in government. And sometimes we hear, oh, these regulations are already in place. It's not like this is all brand new. There are regulations. I say regulations, rules, regulations, pick your word. They're all here already. And if they are, then why is everyone so worried?
Great question. There are a significant number of laws in place today and regulations and frameworks that are applicable to AI. We've seen a 6 times increase over 6 years of AI litigation in the courts. I expect that to double and triple in the coming year. Secretary Chertoff and I wrote a law paper a year ago to bring that point to people. We wanted lawyers, we wanted business people to not be caught off guard. We wanted to make sure that they recognize that courts will be looking at how they've potentially had a material breach of their contract, whether there is a tort violation, whether in the past they've seen AI as a service, is it a product that would have new levels of liability? So the reason people aren't thinking about it is they haven't seen it yet in the courts. We started talking about this 7 years ago, and now we've seen a lot of IP case law. We're seeing the copyright and trademark issues litigated in the court. I expect we'll see that in all the other areas of law. It's not to say we don't need some specificity, some laws to clarify, AI-specific laws for sure that need to be in place, what needs to be tested and standardizing definitions. What's an AI incident? Who should it be reported to? So there are certainly areas where you'd want more certainty.
Like, what is an AI incident?
Well, that's not yet defined. Yeah, so that's a very good question. It's an open question and not one we want to leave open, because right now it's up to every company to define that for themselves and put a measure in place to address what that incident is. We have cyber incidents. We know what those are. We know who in the government you can contact when one happens, but this is a different question. Some are related to cyber, many aren't. We don't want every company figuring this out for themselves. So yes, we definitely will have areas where we want clarifications with the law, but a lot of this will play out not in the state house, but in the courthouse.
Oh, it's funny you should say that, because I talked to the CEO of Cohesity. I don't know if any of you guys know him. And he was talking about sovereign AI and that all of these various countries, they're going to have their own AI. It just is mind-boggling to think that not just that there are different rules, but there's actually different data sets. How do you handle that? I mean, one of your jobs is to bring together all of these thought leaders in AI the last 3 years, right, to try to come up with some of these things in the United States and internationally.
The good news is, while we're talking about different types of AI, we're talking about different cultural values in different countries, when we're talking about governance, it's actually law agnostic. So when I started working with my co-authors, they have—
You mean like the tariffs? I was kidding.
They had very different jobs than I do. We hadn't talked about AI governance before we started writing this book, which was a big risk, but we were very fortunate that when we started talking about it, Paul is a CTO at a bank in the UK, and Ray was head of responsible AI governance for Accenture, so dealing with companies across the globe. When we were talking about AI governance, there was no daylight between how we all addressed it, how we'd seen it, how we were advising companies. It's very similar across the board, similar to the NIST AI risk management framework. You don't have to be in a certain country for it to be applicable to you. Whether you're a nonprofit or a commercial entity, you have ways that it's going to be guiding your governance. How it'll play out in application will be different depending on what type of AI you're talking about. How you interpret it within your own country, you're talking about normative values. There will be differences there, but in terms of governance, the high level of how we address it, and to be clear, governance is the umbrella of how we manage AI, how we manage the risks and the concerns. There are various pieces of that. A key piece is government, but a larger piece is what happens within each company and organization that's using AI. And another piece that we need to be focusing more on is the consumers, the people. What do they know about what to trust and what not to trust?
Well, let's talk about people, because, you know, one of the lines I've heard every hyperscaler leader say it is that it's not AI that'll replace you. You'll be replaced by someone who uses AI. I mean, come on. We could all say that together. Should we say it together?
Yeah.
Let's say it together. Right? I think so. Okay. It's not that AI will replace you. You'll be replaced by the person
who uses AI.
Right. But Miriam says the AI race will be run by leaders who master trust. And I think that's what we're really talking about.
Trust is the hot commodity now. It is what will decide whether or not we'll use a technology. It's what has gotten us on airplanes. Airplanes took years before people would set foot in them, before the average person would use it. There's no way we would set foot in a car if we didn't think it had strong brakes, if we didn't think there were security measures in place to make sure that we would safely enter and exit the car. It's the same with AI. People will not use it if they're not trusting it. That's why we've seen a lack of ROI in the headlines recently. People, companies are spending millions and not necessarily realizing gains because they haven't done the important work of making sure they have governance to help bring trust. So absolutely, governance is an accelerant for innovation.
The other thing is, it's, what is it, 50% of Americans say they're more concerned than excited about the increased use of AI in daily life. And that's up from 37% in 2021. Okay, how are you going to talk everyone into doing this?
So what's interesting about another data point in that study is when you talk to the experts, they are, I believe, 43% more excited than scared about AI. And I'm sorry if I'm getting this number wrong. 72% more excited than scared about the daily life opportunities of AI. So the more people know about it, they know its limitations, but they know its opportunities. So the, what needs to happen is AI literacy. What needs to happen is a three-part conversation. First of all, people need to know they're using AI. Most times, if you ask, please tonight, ask your mother, my mother knows, but you can ask your mother, your aunt, your cousins, ask them if they're using AI. Most of the time, they won't know all the ways that they've used it today alone. Second of all, we need to have a meaningful conversation about risks. People are not using it because they don't trust it. Let's talk about what is it that concerns you. And let's accept that's a real sentiment. That is a very reasonable reaction to this new technology where even the developers are telling us they don't fully understand how it works. Let's give you mitigation strategies so we get to the third part, which is how it can benefit you, your company, your community. So it has to be AI literacy. The companies that are using this are seeing significant gains in their own adoption as well as their efficiencies in their consumer base. There are McKinsey studies this year as well as KPMG. There are numerous studies. I won't bore you with all the numbers, but when there's AI governance in place, when there's AI literacy within a company and for the broader public, that's when people get excited and start using it. Again, you have to talk about the risks and limitations in order to understand the benefits.
When you were on Morning Joe, you guys talked about workforce. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest issues. So number one, we hear all the tech companies and other big companies talking about all the layoffs. And secondly, there's the fear that you are going to lose your job to AI. So how do you handle that?
I think it's a missed opportunity when the companies are just talking about these layoffs. They're not talking about what they're doing internally. First of all, they need to be doing the work and then talking about what they're doing to get their workforce ready. So I think a model in how to do this is what we saw with Walmart last week, where the CEO announced what they're doing to get their workforce AI ready at all ranks, that they don't plan to lay people off. They're questioning what the hiring is going to be. But most importantly, they're taking care of their people. They're bringing their people along with them so that they are AI ready. The company will benefit and they as individuals will benefit. So we really have to start looking at the humans involved here and the companies that are looking at the humans within their company, the humans that they want to be selling to are the ones that are getting the advantage and building the trust.
Do you think that's going to spread? Do you think the other companies are going to do that? I mean, Walmart's so big. Right? They can take some chances.
I think the smart companies will, because again, we're in an age where trust is paramount. Trust is the ticket to whether or not people will subscribe. And I think that we will see a significant difference in who has that competitive advantage because they have taken the steps to build that trust.
Okay, let's ask her the political questions. The federal preemption push. Ooh, did you like
Let's
that?
Let's take it to the audience. I think we've got some opinions here.
Okay, so what's your take?
The federal preemption is a 10-year proposal of a moratorium until the federal Congress decides on how they want to address AI. Should there be a law in Congress saying that there cannot be state laws on this topic while Congress decides on how they want to address AI? That's the basic contours. You know, it's interesting to watch what's happening. We saw California 2 weeks ago pass the first comprehensive law to restrict or to put some limits and expectations on development of AI. That will only apply to the foundation frontier model companies. Will others follow? Obviously, the risk there is if each state has different laws, how can a company comply? You think of it with the large companies, but a small business. How are they going to know what the different expectations are in different states? We're starting to see them pop up across the country. We've already seen some comprehensive frameworks pop up. So the question is, how tenable is that for a company to be able to comply with all the different laws?
Senator Rounds just gave an interview and said the whole history of technology regulation has come from states. So this would be a completely different way to do it. Okay, next, China. What's your take? Where do you think, how do you protect? Do you think that's, is that wide enough, guys? So is China ahead or behind? How do you look at it? And we are coming into the next AI summit in India. Yeah. This is not just about the United States. What's your take?
It would be naive to not be looking at China and learning and seeing that they're on our heels. It is appropriate for us to be understanding the competition and trying to figure out who's winning. There are wins and losses here. Whose AI is populating different continents? That's the reality of what we need to be thinking through. But I think that you cannot underestimate what we keep getting back to, and this is trust. I think the U.S. has had the innovators that have been trusted for years. If you're thinking about any different industry, you know, in drug development, let alone in technology, as we're talking about today, when it comes to brand trust, it's often the U.S. And I think that is imperative that we maintain that trust. And what does that mean? It means AI governance. It means making sure that when we're bringing a product to market, people know what they are and are not using, for whom was it developed, what are the use cases, will my privacy be at risk if I'm using it? Those are the questions that need to be answered. And I think the U.S. is in a strong position to answer those.
Okay, what about TikTok? Do you think it's a good idea? She's like, I'm going to kill you, Tammy. Look at her face.
No. I'm handing this one over to my daughters. How much do we love TikTok in our house?
Well, TikTok is coming to the U.S. I mean, that's what we hear, right? Are you worried that it's going to help China get ahead, gathering all that data? Or what do you think? Or do you not worry about it?
Oh, I think they've gathered it. I think that is past
tense. Already done. Okay, last two questions. The most important questions. Everyone be ready. What is your favorite AI? Now, just to be clear, I asked Jensen the same question last week. What is your answer? What's your favorite AI?
It's hard to answer that. I mean, I would go old school on you know, I love using it for Waze. I love using it for GPS. I love using it for Netflix recommendations. So that's old school narrow AI. But my daily life, I love it as a thought partner. You know, I can't bother my staff here in the middle of the night. I need to respect their nights and weekends. And I have this thought partner who can help me realize where's the gaps. You know, here's five questions I want to ask. What else would you ask?
But I mean, do you do what I do? Do you go to ChatGPT and then you go to Perplexity and then you go to Claude? Gemini,
absolutely.
You move around, you go to everything.
Depending on what the task is, they have different voices and different expertise for sure.
Is there one you want to tell these folks about that you use that, you know, people wouldn't know? Like Leonardo is really good and unexpected, not that big in the U.S. Lots of good pictures.
You wouldn't know about. I mean, I think this crowd knows about all of them. I think Claude is very popular, Anthropic's Claude, for the constitution safety protocols they put in place. For business, I think that is a great tool to be using. ChatGPT is so accessible. You know, use it knowing that they've told us what their privacy constraints are or not. I think Notebook LM is spectacular. You know, mm-hmm. having a report uploaded and have it read back to you with these fun co-host anchors. I mean, they'll certainly put my podcast in AI We Trust out of business. They have a rapport. But, you know, we did upload our Secretary Chertoff's and our paper last year, and they did a wonderful podcast for us immediately talking about this important, significant paper published in Penn Law, but it was actually NYU Law.
Oh, well, everyone confuses them. Okay, one more question, and this is the most important. What is your favorite prompt?
Revise.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, could you ask for a better one? Right here. Miriam Bogle, that you spent how many years? 5, 6, 8 years?
We're going our 8th year, yeah.
The 8 years working on all these issues for the benefit of all of us. You're a very special person. I'm honored to call you friend. And I'm so excited about the book. And sold out, by the way.
Yeah.
Sold out. We literally have the last 50 copies till the next edition. So people listening, you'll be able to get it later. Congratulations.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.